All right, folks, joining us now is Dr. Shiva Iyadure. Glad to have him on. He's running for president, shivaforpresident.com. Now, he live streamed the debate on Twitter, like a lot of other people did, and gave his comments in real time. So we want to talk to him about the debate. But as I was talking to him off air, he's very interested in talking about the Supreme Court cases and the First Amendment infringements that came from those. And I am, too. I talked about them some on Friday. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Shiva.
Yeah, good to be here, David. How are you?
Doing good. Doing good.
Good. So, David, what I wanted to do was, as many people know, I was heavily involved, probably the centerpiece of the entire discovery of the fact that the government of the United States, in fact, all governments of the world, have a backdoor censorship portal into every social media company.
Yes.
In my 2020 case, David, you may remember, I uncovered in courtroom testimony the fact that the government of Massachusetts had coerced Twitter, or Twitter would never have thrown me off had it not been for the government of Massachusetts, because I exposed the fact that the government of Massachusetts had destroyed ballot images, which is a violation of the federal law. Mm-hmm. When I went to do my own audit of how possibly I could have lost my election to a guy who had no lawn signs, nothing, in Massachusetts. Everyone can go to winbackfreedom.com. I don't want to go through that. I've talked about that extensively, but it was my work, my representing myself in court, which exposed the fact, bare view to 500 million people all over the world, that the government of the United States, starting in it was Trump who created CISA, unanimously approved by both wings of Congress. Both wings of Congress, 99% are funded by AIPAC, right? Yeah. Both wings of Congress supported the execution of a law which allowed the creation of infrastructure for government to coerce social media companies to do their bidding, or more, probably better, to have a collusion between social media companies and government as one entity, what some people call state imperialism, you know? So that's what I uncovered. And most important was my case showed conclusively with evidence that the government coercing Twitter to do that, period. Yeah. And that's why I won my federal injunction in court. Now, except you, David, and a few other people who covered that case, none of the mainstream media grifters, including Glenn Greenwald, who I consider a grifter, and we can talk about it, or I call him Effer Carlson, right? I'll be kind on your show, right? none of these, they actually concealed it for 2 years. And they spoke about it in the so-called Twitter files, acting like they had discovered this. But the reality was they concealed it during the most important time when it needed to be brought out. That's what these guys always do. Mm-hmm. It's called a limited CIA hangout. All right. Anyway, after I exposed all of this, David, interesting enough, they found two other brown guys, people who look like me, Indian guys. One of them is a guy called Jay Bhattacharya, who had promoted lockdowns in a scientific paper in 2020. All right. Out of Stanford. You know, my stuff was going viral, and this is what happens when an independent agent like me brings out the truth, or you, David. What they do is, it's a very insidious technique. They don't want to give limelight to the independent people who bring out the truth. So what they do is they hide that truth, and then they put one of their controlled opposition people to, quote unquote, hijack that finding and own it. And that's what happened. So these guys in Missouri versus Biden file a lawsuit. And I was very, very upset with Jim Hoff, because Jim covered our cases from the Gateway Pundit. Never told me they were doing any of this.
That's interesting. And yeah, I saw that he was one of the defendants or plaintiffs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And Jim covered our case extensively. Now, when I read the case, because I read cases, I said, this case is going to fail. It's set up to fail, because they couldn't show directly that the government, you know, at their bidding, social media companies did it. Now, why is this important? Because social media companies have their First Amendment right. Government also has First Amendment right. Okay, from the Constitution. The issue is, did Twitter do what the government wanted? Because Twitter would not have done it if the government didn't call them. You see, it's a very important thing.
Yeah.
I have First Amendment rights. Government has First Amendment rights, and so does a company like Twitter. So it's a very important thing to show that if there is government forcing Twitter to do this, it's called state action by a very important ruling that you have to argue, called Blum versus Uretsky, which I argued successfully in federal court in Massachusetts. That's why I got my injunction. I won that. Mm-hmm. It's the centerpiece of the case. Now, after I won it and went on to the major trial, the judge was trying to bribe me to drop all the claims against the government. And he appointed me a lawyer who was colluding also with the judge and the government from all perspective. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't accede. And then they tried to come after me. And that's why I actually filed a new case in December 2023 against the U.S. government, not just Massachusetts. So that case is live. Okay. Mm-hmm. But everyone needs to understand that I'm the one who has the actual evidence, David, that can stand courtroom testimony, which is I have the case of the century, which shows we have the courtroom testimony from the government, social media director of the government of Massachusetts, telling a federal judge, yes, I contacted Twitter. We didn't like his tweets. And when they took it down, we were relieved, quote unquote. Hmm. It doesn't get any better than that. Yeah. These clowns who filed Missouri versus Biden was flawed. And it's funny, they found two Indian guys who knew about our case. And you would think if they wanted to strengthen it, they would have referred to our case.
Yeah.
So why didn't they refer to it? So they set up a case where they filed it in, you know, Republican-centric federal courts so they'd win those in the Fifth Circuit. But when it went up to the Supreme Court, Amy Coney Barrett destroyed it because she said, you don't have exact evidence of the government actually coercing social media. Because in the cases that they had, the social media companies already had these people on their red flag list, right? Mm-hmm. But my case, they didn't. I was never thrown off social media. You see?
Yeah.
So my case was a court. So why didn't they include my case when it was so well known all over the world?
And you know, we've seen this type of thing from the Supreme Court in the past. I've talked many times about as they were putting in the National Firearms Act and other things like that. And back in the 1930s, they had a guide to establish that act. They had a guy who was a convicted criminal, had previous convictions, Miller, and he had a sawed-off shotgun, and so they bring this action against him, and that was the case that they wanted to bring in. They argued that he couldn't have a sawed-off shotgun because it was not a military weapon, and he even died before the case was heard at the Supreme Court. They went ahead with it anyway, even though the guy was dead. It wasn't a moot case. You know, when you look at something like this, and Barrett says, these people don't have standing. It's like, who had standing to decide a case of a guy that's already died? But they, when they want to establish a precedent, they'll do anything, no matter how ridiculous it is, you know, and I think what they're doing.
What I'm saying here, David, is why didn't these people who knew about my case reach out?
Yeah.
Why did they even reference it? They intentionally concealed our case in Massachusetts, knowing it was the landmark case here in Massachusetts. Why would you conceal it, David? That's the question. Mm-hmm. And the only conclusion you come in, either they're really, really dumb and incompetent, or it was done intentionally. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's the only two conclusions. Either you're dumb and you're an incompetent lawyer on the most important case, that knowing the history that I had revealed that, by the way, it was Trump who signed into law CISA, which created that backdoor infrastructure, supported by both wings of Congress. You have this landmark case where we actually have the government telling a federal judge, yeah, I did it. I told Twitter to do this, and I was relieved. Courtroom testimony. Why would you not include that? Mm-hmm. When you knew this would go to the Supreme Court, you did it intentionally. Either you didn't want to give me credit because you're jealous, but it was quite interesting. They go find two brown-skinned Indian guys to be the centerpiece of that. Mm-hmm. Right? It's almost like a replacement strategy, but you don't bring out the most important findings. So Amy Coney Barrett, if you read her analysis, and I read it very carefully, she says, in order to show this, you need the evidentiary proof that Twitter or Facebook would not have done this without government intervention. You see? Mm-hmm. That's like the smoking gun. That's what we have. Mm-hmm. So why would you not include the most important piece of evidence?
Yeah.
Okay. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
So they didn't include this because if you look at this, it was a 6-3 ruling by the Supreme Court, basically giving it to the government. So the government now, and everyone should listen, sets up a precedent ruling at the highest court in the land. So everyone else who gets thrown off social media by government intervention has to even go much harder. Okay? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Much, much harder, because what these fools did. I'm talking about the attorneys in Murthy versus Biden on the plaintiff side. You can't just blame the Supreme Court. This was a setup.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. So the Supreme Court handed it to the left, or whatever you want to call it, the swarm, as I call it, okay,
mm-hmm.
by giving them, saying that government can legally censor speech, and they're retroactively protected now, which is what I predicted would happen. This is very much similar to the telecommunications. They did it through Congress, where Congress gave a retroactive immunity to the when the government was using telecommunications companies to, in 2000 under the Bush administration to spy on U.S. citizens. They retroactively, Congress left and right got together and they passed a rule to indemnify these companies.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what just happened here.
Mm-hmm.
The left and right, if you look at this, there's three, the far right guys on the Supreme Court, but the three, you know, Roberts, Coney Barrett, and others colluded with the left to screw over. Basically, they destroyed the First Amendment online.
Yeah.
Destroyed.
Yeah.
Now, the next day, what do? They pass a, they said, okay, but we're getting rid of the Chevron doctrine. Now, remember, the Supreme Court ruling that they just did basically says any agency in the government, any government can silence the speech of you, American citizens, silently launder censorship through social media companies. It's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've set the bar so high because of this ridiculous lawsuit that they did not include my findings purposely, intentionally. That's what they did. They sabotaged the American people. I say it was deliberate.
Mm-hmm.
The next day, they then, the Supreme Court, again, in a 6-3, the same set of people, right, rule to eliminate the Chevron doctrine. In 1984, in Chevron versus, I think, NRDC, the question has been this. Congress writes laws, right? The executive branch, that's the legislative branch, executive branch is supposed to enforce the laws. And the judicial branch in the United States is supposed to interpret the laws. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, in that part, sometimes Congress probably, likely, on purpose, will write laws that are vague, right?
Oh, yeah.
Let's say...
That's been a standard thing. Pelosi said, we'll have to pass it to find out what's in it, right? With Obama,
right.
Care, remember?
Let's say they pass laws that are vague.
Mm-hmm.
So, this in the Chevron versus NRDC historic precedent-setting case in 1984... The Supreme Court ruled in those instances, an agency which has subject matter expertise in that area, we will defer to that. It's called agency deference. It's a principle.
Mm-hmm.
So if the courts if there's a law that comes to be interpreted in front of the Supreme Court, the courts or any court have to defer to the agency within the government and get their opinion first. And if their opinion rules, so it's really a fourth branch of government, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that set up the Chevron doctrine for the last 30, 40 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
1984 to today. Now, in the Fisherman's case, I think it was relentless. I forget there's two cases that came up. The Supreme Court ruled 6-3 to strike down the Chevron doctrine, which meant that Congress must put together clear laws so you don't have to go through this interpretation process. But here's the deal. It's a shell game. Because you're moving away the corruption from the agencies, guess what, to the lobbyists. Because we know the lobbyists are the ones who are influencing Congress to write the laws.
Mm-hmm.
So what you noticed was the right-wing libertarians or even the Republicans are like, oh my God, this is great. Chevron doctrine has been smashed. But if you go look at any of those people's Twitter feeds, they were silent on what the government did 24 hours before. The Supreme Court did, the quote unquote, the Republican right wing Supreme Court did to mm-hmm. destroy free speech in the United States. So look at this. So in 24 hours, the Supreme Court passes, takes down the Chevron doctrine, which had flaws with it, to throw a bone to the Republican right. So they'd say, oh my God, great. We don't have the deep state now. And you can read those tweets and those Facebook posts. But those same grifters posting that, David, not one of them said anything against the same right-wing Republican court, which had just allowed every agency, government agency, the right to silence speech.
Yeah.
Destroyed the First Amendment. So on the one hand, they took down the First Amendment, the Supreme Court, and they threw a bone of, oh, we've taken away the Chevron doctrine.
Mm-hmm.
But we know that that corruption that ruled the agencies through a la the Chevron doctrine is just going to get shifted and consolidated over to the lobbyists in Congress. Now, I can see this as, you know, as bright as day, because I take a systems approach, David. The non-systems people were out there. Oh my God, we got this over here. What's like, showing the monkey the mirror over here. So, you know, you don't show the banana over here, right? So the big elephant in the room is the Supreme Court destroyed the First Amendment. The right-wing Republican Supreme Court destroyed the First Amendment. And that same Republican right-wing Supreme Court threw a bone to the Republican right-wing saying, oh my God, this is great. You guys can gloat over the Chevron doctrine being taken away.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happened, David.
I agree. Well, I think that, you know, I agree that, you know, that is there as an appeasement to people. I think a lot of people looking at this, I've talked about the power of the bureaucracy and how it has grown over the years. I talk about regulation without representation as much as taxation without representation. I got a couple of comments here. Let me pass these on to you and get your comment on them. AP Rumble Seat writes, maybe we need people like Dr. Shiva to establish legal think tanks state to state. Well, that's kind of what you're doing with your educational classes, isn't it?
Yeah, so who was that? A Rumble? Who's
the name? The user's name is AP Rumble Seat. I'm not sure. Rumble?
Yeah, so AP Rumble, what we've done is we've created a very powerful movement. And the bottom line, you know, theme of our movement is save yourself. If you can see that, David, right?
Mm-hmm.
Save yourself on these. And then we tell people, David, on the back of these cards, look what's going on. The swarm is actually killing you. Lifespan is going down.
Mm-hmm.
Cost of living is going up. So our position, David, is that the individual in the United States, if you want to be a real citizen, must take responsibility for your life.
Yes.
Politicians are not going to do it. There's no savior coming to do that. The only person going to do that is you. You must save yourself. Yeah. In order to save yourself, you got to understand the way systems work. Now, the value that I'm bringing to in my run for president and beyond that is to explain to people, look, I've discovered those tools. I have the tools. If you want to learn it, we're here. But if you want to outsource your future to one of these clowns, right?
Mm-hmm.
And all of these clowns, by the way, are agents of Israel. Every single one of them. They're all Zionists. And they've hijacked, by the way, Christianity, and they've duplicitly taken advantage of the American Christians to think that Zionism equals Christianity, which it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
But what our movement educates people on the fundamental view that the future is up to you and you have to learn how to fight. Now, I have created those tools. So that's what you're referring to, David. So in every state now, for that matter, all over the world now, we're in about 100 plus countries in the United States, in every state. And our leaders who are running our movement, the first thing they're teaching people is if you want to vote for Dr. Shiva, you also have to be willing to stand up for yourself. Mm-hmm. This is not about him saving you. Dr. Right. Shiva will offer, you know, you the analysis, the tools. I'll get on the ground and fight every day, David. I've been doing that all my life since I was 17 years old or 12 years old, you know, mm-hmm. as an activist.
Mm-hmm.
But the American people need to rise up, bottoms up, and fight. And so if you looked at that debate that took place, you had one guy who's a complete liar and another guy whose brain is mush,
yeah,
right?
I know.
So one unethical individual finding a very unhealthy individual.
And I was hoping that maybe the takeaway from that, before it happened, there was one piece on Reason. They said, well, maybe the best outcome of this would be if it was really, really bad. And it was really, really bad. And I was hoping, and I said it on Friday, I said it again today, I'm hoping that people will see that there, as you point out, there is no savior coming. That's what I try to focus on all the time. Work bottom up. That's how we've got to do this, not top down. The top down is totally corrupt. And so I think that's a very important message that we both agree on, that we've got to work from the bottom up. And I do want to talk more about that. I've got a couple of other comments here. Let me throw these at you before we get into the debate. Texas Coast South, it'll never change as long as their federal fiat money system to corrupt all things like it has. What do you say about that? What about that? The dollar status is reserve and the petrodollar and all the rest of that stuff. Is that about to change? What do you think?
Well, I think we don't want to put the symptom separate from the cause. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What has happened, David, for the last 50 years, and by the way, in late 80s, there was an academic meeting of the leading scholars in the world. They got together on the East Coast, and a decision was made, and we can do a whole video on this, at this meeting that in New York, that we must demoralize the American public so they never build a bottoms-up workers' movement. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so starting from that day to today, the effort of the elites has been to demoralize people to never actually get their hands dirty, go out on the streets and hand out flyers, mobilize a movement like we're doing for Truth, Freedom, Health, or our campaign. They don't want working people out independently organizing, David. They don't want them doing that. So the viewer's comments there have two aspects. Yes, he's addressing one of the many facets of corruption and ways that the swarm enslaves us through a fiat money system. There are many ways. They also enslave us by controlling the water supply and the food, so people can't even think about the fiat money supply. Okay, they don't have; they're losing their intelligence even to think about that. You see, there's many, many ways that they shackle us. But regardless of that, the number one way that the establishment shackles us is to demoralize people to just pontificate all day, to talk about things, but never to get up and build movements. So if you think about a guy like Noam Chomsky, he writes a book called Manufacturing Consent, which is a detailed analysis of how the swarm controls us. But Chomsky demoralizes anyone from ever building a bottoms-up movement. So you'll see all these grifters on the internet talking, doing deep analysis, but they're not out there doing the hard, practical work of how you build a movement, teaching people the tools and putting the onus on them. We're the only force right now on the planet doing that in a systematic way.
Mm-hmm.
So I would encourage the viewer there, come to our open house. We'll teach you how to fight. What you're describing is a symptom. It's an obvious symptom. There are many things like that. But at the root of it is that for the last 70 years, the American people have been demoralized to outsource their future to everything.
Yeah.
To watch,
I agree.
You know, WWE wrestling all day, right?
I agree.
To vote for one of these politicians. And when someone like me comes along bottoms up, it's so new, they're not even thinking, wait a minute, this guy's actually out there. We're actually collecting our signatures to get on the ballot. By the way, we're on the ballot in Utah. The first time a naturalized citizen is on the ballot in the United States for president. And people said we couldn't do it.
Hmm. Okay.
So, and this goes to the heart of the founders of the United States, which believed in and a lot of people, 99% of the lawyers don't know about this principle called non-justiciable issues. The founders of the United States knew, the framers, that there would be issues that would come up that even their articles and their tenement, you know, the Bill of Rights couldn't conceive of. So they had a room for non-justiciable issues, movements that would come bottoms up that would create new laws. And this is why bottoms-up movements are central in the minds of the framers of the Constitution. They're in the subtext. So mm-hmm. You had stupid people like Arnold Schwarzenegger, you can't run for president, you're a naturalized citizen. Well, yeah, just pontificating you can. But if you build a bottoms-up movement, and you say, wait a minute, I got hundreds of thousands of people want me on the ballot, that becomes a reality. Like anything, women didn't have the right to vote. Afghan women had the right to vote before American women. Well, mm-hmm. There was a bottoms-up movement that was built, right? If you went to the late 1700s and you went to the federal Supreme Court and you said, hey, I'm a black person, I should be allowed into that white restaurant, they'd throw out the case. This is why we need movements. Movements came, we created the 14th Amendment, the 19th Amendment, and that's what we're doing, David. The framers knew this concept of non-justiciable issues.
Well, I agree with you on the bottom-up solution. Yep. I absolutely do. I do believe, though, that there is a process for changing the Constitution that would be something other than a large movement. But and let me. There's a couple of people have left a comment here about rights, and I'd like to get your clarification about this. I'll read their comments here. Texas Coast South says only people have rights. When you work for government, you have personal rights, yes, but not rights to trample on others. And then scroll down. Let me get the other one that was there. Another one, Rational Lampooner says we tell government what it's allowed to do. It has no rights of its own. Corporations are not people. I've said in the past, and this is my position on it, corporations are creatures of the state. They exist by government-granted privileges. States, when we talk about them, we look at the 10th Amendment, it talks about the powers of the states and of the peoples. If it's not delegated, if the powers are not delegated to the federal government. So states have powers. Corporations are creatures of the state. They have privileges. People have rights because we're created in the image of God, as the Declaration of Independence acknowledges. So how do you see that fitting in?
Well, David, it gets back to the earlier point you said as an aside. There are fundamental rights that exist independent of all government, you know, divine rights of people. And I think the founders had this in their notion, right? Inalienable rights.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a central piece there. Now, in the manifestation of the United States and laws, et cetera, right? How these are translated, there's three ways we get our rights. And this is something no rights are given to us because they're just inalienable.
Mm-hmm.
We as human beings have to fight for these rights. Yes, they may be inalienable, just like everyone is a beautiful soul, but ultimately how you express yourself on this, you may be a beautiful soul. People say, oh, he's such a beautiful soul. Yeah, but he's a criminal. He goes and kills people, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in the same way, when organizations get together, yes, we have these inalienable rights, but do we as a human organization exhibit those rights, those inalienable rights? Well, that's where you get into this contradiction. This is why we call the fight, the struggle.
Mm-hmm.
We have to fight for them. We have to fight against these people inhibiting those. And this is central to understand. So if you look at how quote unquote laws come into being three ways or amendments, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have a 2/3, majority of Congress, right? Or you have a constitutional convention called, or the fact that rulings take place at the Supreme Court level, precedential rulings, and they are used, like in the Chevron case, for 40 years, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because by the Constitution, those don't really exist, right? So
yeah. Yeah, and I have always had a problem with Marbury versus Madison because it wasn't in the Constitution, but the Supreme Court gave themselves that power. Jefferson said, well, that's it. It's over when he saw that, essentially. So it is it's kind of been a very clever the way they asserted these powers that are there. But
you have this fact that there's these multiple interconnected things going on, which at a certain point in time, what we call the law, right?
Mm-hmm.
But key among all these things, I think people keep forgetting, and the establishment wants us to forget this, they're forgetting this other piece, which is the people, the political process of people rising up bottoms up. Because the original article says only he can be president, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how did that happen? If it wasn't for women rising up, right? They went to the Democrats to ask for the right to vote, right? Mm-hmm. They laughed at them.
Mm-hmm.
Then the 19th Amendment was created, which applied the Equal Protection Clause to women from the 14th Amendment. But right. None of that would have occurred if there was not a bottoms-up movement. And this is what we need to understand.
And I understand, and I agree with that. You know, I think the movements are important, but I think it's also important for them to, you know, we have to have some kind of an established thing, just like you're talking about the 19th Amendment, or we had the 18th Amendment where they prohibited alcohol, then 21 where they brought it back. So those types of things are driven from the ground up. But I think it also they need to dot the I and cross the T legally.
Right, but David, that always comes later. Politicians never do in Trump versus Anderson on March 4th, 2024. This is a very important ruling. The Colorado courts denied Trump access to the ballot in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that he violated the Section 3 of the Insurrection Act of the 14th Amendment. So by constitutional provisions, he had violated that. They ruled on that and they threw him off the ballot in two court rulings. Then the Supreme Court swooped in. And they said, whoa, 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 you can't do this. Why? Because they said, we're going to have a patchwork. That's what was put forward, a patchwork of states, each with their own laws on how you run for president.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very important ruling.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, even if you have a constitutional provision that's being violated at the federal level by a federal candidate, the states have no right to deny ballot access. That was a 9-0 ruling.
Yeah.
Because they didn't want the United States as an organism to fall apart, which is what was post-Civil War. Again, these are some very, very fundamental rulings are taking place. And I think everyone needs to really understand what's going on. So that ruling is important to my running for president. Because when I'm trying to get on the ballot, some people are confused about what took place between naturalized and quote unquote natural born, which is never defined, the 14th Amendment, the 19th Amendment, you know, Schneider versus Rusk, Bowling versus Sharp, that there have been other rulings, including Trump versus Anderson. So if it wasn't for Trump versus Anderson, which is a Supreme Court, Trump would be thrown off the ballot in Colorado. So you do have, long before constitutional amendments get passed, you have these Supreme Court rulings, which are very, very powerful. They sustain a body of law. So yes, maybe one day Congress will do something. But what that ruling said was only Congress has a right to decide who becomes president. It's quite amazing, this ruling. So when I'm getting on the ballot, it's the same thing. No state has a right to deny me ballot access by pointing to a constitutional provision. If I win the presidency, only Congress has a right to say, you know what? We now have to interpret natural born versus naturalized citizen. And then they had have to deny me access to the presidency, you see? But this is quite powerful. It basically goes down to the central part of non-justiciable issues, bottoms-up movements. So
let me, I've got a person here, Mad Mem, thank you. And says, good morning, David and Dr. Shiva. You're both doing God's work. Go to shivaforpresident.com. I don't think we mentioned that earlier. That's your website. Is there a different website for the, you know, the training classes that you got?
So the operating system, what I've created is truthfreedomhealth.com, David, truthfreedomhealth.com. Everyone, if you want to save yourself and get off the plantation, I can't do it for people. Go to truthfreedomhealth.com, become a warrior scholar. That training teaches people how to think from a systems approach. It is the same training I used to teach at MIT. The elites learned this training. This is how the few are able to control the many. And if you want to know more about how the few control the many, the website that I recommend people go to is shatterthesswarm.com. Shatterthesswarm.com. Okay. S-H-A-T-T-E-R. Now, our campaign is fueled by this people who've gone through this training, and everyone should get one of these bumper stickers, and people can go to shivaforpresident.com, S-H-I-V-A numeral four president.com, and everyone should go there, get one of these bumper stickers, because this gives you the ability to use your own car as a very powerful vehicle to reach 100,000 people a day. Shiva numeral four president.com. But, and every Thursdays, David, at 11 a.m. and 8 p.m., we have a open house. And we, people can go to vashiva.com/orientation or come to our town hall, shivaforpresident.com/town hall. But and, those are some of the mechanics of people get involved.
Okay. And so those there's links to those other websites at Shiva, the number four. President.com.
President.com. Yep.
Okay, good.
Yep.
I've got another question here. This is from DG8. It says, Dr. Shiva, what's your thoughts on AIPAC bragging on their own website of the 400 plus politicians they own? America first?
Well, it's not America first. That's so, you know, and by the way, the biggest person who is a beneficiary of this, who's going to be even a bigger beneficiary, is Trump.
Yeah.
Trump is the biggest Zionist. And you can see what I said. I don't want to use those words here. On the show, he, you know, he serves Israel. Biden serves Israel.
Yeah.
Booby Kennedy serves Israel. All of them do. To me, I'm the only anti-Zionist candidate. And I've been talking about this for 40 years. Anti-Zionism is not anti-Semitism. It was Trump in 2016 who passed an executive order which said that we must equate anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism. Now, after October 7th, everyone knows that was an engineered attack on, quote unquote, Israel by Hamas, which is funded by Israel. I mean, it's obvious. It's right in front of your face, right? After that attack took place, I started re-educating people on the difference between Zionism and Judaism. One of those videos, in spite of all the shadow banning, got, I think, like 50 to 70 million views, David, globally. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It was what Rice said. I'm the only presidential candidate who doesn't bleep, you know, Zionist bleep. Okay. Mm-hmm. And people can go find that. But that video went viral. And the difference here is that on December 7th, Mike Johnson, a quote unquote Christian, you know, Zionist, mm-hmm. passed a bill in Congress equating anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism.
Yes.
And then about 4 weeks ago, the entire Congress passed a bill, 310, the House, to 70, saying that going into the future, they will be using the definition of anti-Semitism pursuant to the Israel Holocaust Remembrance Alliance, which is a complete Zionist nutjob organization.
Yeah, they outsourced it, didn't even define it themselves.
Yeah, well, if you go read it, the seven of the 11 examples they give of what is anti-Semitism is if you say anything against the state of Israel, including if you say Israel is worse than another state. That's anti-Semitism, which is really anti-Zionism, okay? Which is a political ideology. So Trump is one of the biggest Zionist blah, you know, bleepers. Mm-hmm. Okay, you can fill that blank in. Biden is so, and Booby Kennedy. Booby Kennedy said the Palestinian people are the most pampered people on the planet. And then he compared the people in Gaza to Nazis, that we must go in there and wipe them out. Mm-hmm. And look at how great Germany became after we wiped out the Nazis. So if we wipe these people out, so why is this? Because all of these people are part of the swarm. All of them. They serve Israel. They do not serve the American working people. And if we want to, those people, even the Free Palestine movement has been infiltrated by quote unquote liberal Zionists who keep talking about, you know, ceasefire now. They've been saying that for 40 years. Ceasefire now basically means Israel gets to move two steps forward, one step back. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean end the occupation. Very different slogan, David. Yeah. We must end the occupation of America. And this viewer is rightfully saying that, that AIPAC is gloating that they control Congress. And Congress is a representative body of the American people, which means between us and Congress now is AIPAC, which means Zionism.
Yeah.
And central to the founders was that Congress ultimately is a representative body of we the people. So the House, 90%, 95% of those people are controlled by AIPAC. Cynthia McKinney, who was a congresswoman who just endorsed me, she was thrown out years ago for bringing this out, for exposing the involvement of Zionism in Congress.
Well, I think it's pretty clear. You know, it was also DeSantis jumped into that, you know, to get money, and so equating criticism of a political state, Israel, with anti-Semitism, and then making it a criminal offense. The type of stuff that we're starting to see in this law that everybody's being concerned about in Germany, but also in Ireland. You know, they're doing that as well. We're going to make hate speech an imprisonable offense and lock people up in prison. Well, they started doing that. The Republican Party did that in Florida with that. And so I think that's two very important things. I don't support any kind of hate speech regulation. I think you can't have you can't have freedom of speech if there's going to be such a thing as free speech, I think.
But David, it just happened. When was it? A couple of months ago when they passed that bill in Congress.
Mm-hmm.
It was, again, if you notice, all of this is being done by the Republican right.
That's right. That's right.
The Republican right, everyone listening, you MAGAtards are the ones who are supporting this.
Yep, that's right.
Wearing Make America Great Again and literally supporting Israel. So we have now a law that's going to go to Congress, which is going to give the Department of Education infinite rights to take away money from schools that, let's say, support. Let's say MIT tomorrow wanted to invite me to speak on anti-Zionism. They would say, you can't invite that speaker. He's anti-Semitic, equating anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism. We'll remove your federal funds. Or let's say a high school wanted to invite me to come speak, David.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is being done by the so-called Republican right.
Yes.
Not by the woke Democrats, but the Republican right is supporting massive fascism, pro-Israel, anti-American interests. Right. And this is, and the spirit of it, this is Donald Trump. That's why when I looked at that debate, David, I don't know if you want to go there.
Yeah, we're getting close to the end of the show, but we got a few minutes and we can go over a little bit. Give us your take on the show. Now, you, just like some other people, many people live streamed the debate, even though it was from CNN. They did it on Twitter. Musk said, go ahead and sue me. This is important. So you had commentators who were doing it and commenting live. You did it as a candidate and responding to the questions. Tell us a little bit about that. And of course, people can see that on Twitter as well.
I bet you if we had streamed CNN, we would have been sued, but not Boobie Kennedy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
After I decided to do it, then Boobie steals everything we do. Okay. Mm-hmm. Boobie Kennedy is an agent of the swarm. That's who he is. He's fake independent. He's a Zionist puppet. Okay. Mm-hmm. Completely. They're all so, but anyway, if you looked at that debate separate from the fact, so what I saw interesting was we know Biden is on a set of cocktails, right? That keep his brain from going mush.
Yeah.
And we know here Trump is just a liar. He'll say anything he needs to say to get as much money as he can. And we've had this discussion sure. with other people like Alex Jones does the same thing, right?
Yep.
Even though he knows things are wrong, he'll do it to raise money. Okay. So Trump is a master grifter. So here's a lying master grifter who has sex with prostitutes, you know, while his wife is pregnant. And over here, you have a guy, Biden, whose brain has essentially become mush. Now, what I found fascinating is, again, if you go to Central Principles, anything you see on mainstream media is something they want you to see.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
That's
so
right.
They wanted people to see a decrepit Biden. Now, how do they do that? Did they change his medical cocktail mix before that debate? Because he looked horrible. Yeah. And the next day, they gave him the right cocktails where he looks really strong. So I mean, it's amazing, right?
Yeah. You got the puppy uppers. Right? Yeah. You got the.
Yeah. Right. So I would argue that someone, remember, the swarm has its own internal conflicts. Someone has decided they maybe don't want Biden.
Mm-hmm.
They want somebody else because they're going to serve Zionism even better.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I found it quite profound that how bad they made Biden look.
Yes.
Okay. And the next day he's going. So I just want everyone to alert people that everything that you see on media is theater.
That's
it
right.
is brought to you by the swarm to serve the swarm.
And, you know, looking at the fact that the timing that they did it, we've always had the debates after the convention. Neither of these guys has been nominated as the official person, right? But they're
exactly.
debating each other. And it's all usually the conventions are in late August. You don't have the first debate until the end of September. And then you have September, mid-October, latter part of October. I mentioned this many times to the audience. This time, they just leapfrogged all that stuff. And I think it was for the purpose of sabotaging him and getting somebody else in there. You have any predictions
exactly.
as to who you think it'll be?
Well, I think I've said this from day one. I've always said that they wanted Gavin Newsom. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think that's where they want, you know, someone in there. Maybe they'll throw a brown face like Kamala Harris in there, who's a Brahmin, who's mm-hmm. also a Zionist, who's all, you know. But I think that's their game. But it was obvious to everyone watching they want Biden out, whoever the
yeah.
within the swarm,
yeah.
right? They have their own internal conflicts. And you can see all of Silicon Valley supporting Trump. In fact, CNN is supporting Trump.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It was so obvious.
Everybody's like, how did this happen? We never knew that he had any cognitive issues. It's really
yeah, exactly.
Funny.
And the
yeah.
next day, everyone should go watch his rally. The next day, Biden's all fired up, da-da-da-da-da-da, because he got the right cocktails.
Yeah.
So whoever engineered this, they make sure he got the wrong cocktails before the debate. And the right. And to your point, David, the timing of these debates, why would you do this debate when general election debates are not even supposed to take place after the convention?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
everything people see, elections are selections.
Yeah.
And it's all theater.
Yeah. Well, we're right at the end of the program, but let me get you. You talk a lot about the swarm. That's your term. Define that a little bit for people. How do you see the swarm? Is that the globalists? Is it the bureaucracy, the deep state? How do you see the swarm?
Yeah. So, David, I have a much more precise and tangible and accessible definition. So it takes away a lot of the quote unquote, you know, what the left or other people call conspiracy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if people go to shattertheswarm.com,
okay.
shatterswarm.com, you will understand it. So I really encourage everyone, if you want to start your first level of learning how to fight, start with knowing who thy enemy is. Who's a swarm? They're not a particular geographical location, Israel,
mm-hmm.
or the Pentagon, or some location, North Korea. First of all, it's not spatially based.
Mm-hmm.
Nor is it not temporally based, something over time. You know, at this location, the swarm exists and now it doesn't. Okay? And it's not consolidated in a particular set of people,
mm-hmm.
like the quote unquote the Rothschilds. It's not, or the quote unquote the Jews or the quote unquote Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
It is a highly interconnected, telepathic, interconnected group of people who may have their own contradictions from time to time. because it's WWE wrestling, right?
Right.
Blah, blah, blah. But overall, they move together as a blob. If you watch, you know, those these birds that move over the ocean at night.
Oh, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You see them, that they move like this. One time they're moving, one group may move this way, but they ultimately move together.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That is what the swarm is. It's a much more precise understanding, okay, of how, and you can learn how the few control the 8 billion of us. And so I've taken complex control systems, made it very accessible. So everyone should go to shattertheswarm.com. Step one, if you want to save yourself, understand who the enemy is. Step two, David, is everyone needs to understand this graph here. If you can see it, lifespan in the United States is going down. Cost of living is going up.
Mm-hmm.
These people are literally killing you. Mm-hmm. And everyone should go to Shatter the Swarm. But I am here to provide people tools on how to fight. But you must want to take responsibility for yourself. You have to want to save yourself. If you don't want to save yourself, that's why we're in this condition. If you look at this graph, this has been going on since 1970, David.
Yeah.
We keep thinking, oh, Bernie's going to do it. Ooh, Trump's going to do it. Ooh, Booby may do it now. Ooh, Biden may do it. We got to get off our butts and be real Americans. We have to want to fight for ourselves. That is the only way out of it. Now, my run for president gives people the opportunity to have someone like me lead people to the extent my leading is, hey, here's the water. This is where you go. You want to be a good horse and drink the water. That's mm-hmm. what I've created, that mm-hmm. water, that mana, which is truth, freedom, health. But if you don't want to do that, well, please, I will give you a recommendation letter to go vote for Biden or Booby, because you're going to be slowly cooked like the frog.
Yeah.
So that's what our movement's about, David. It's that's really great. About personal responsibility.
And that's what I like. That's what I like about it. It's you know, I think we put way too much information and too much hope on the presidency. And your message that we've got to do it ourselves, we've got to do it from the bottom up, that is exactly what needs to happen. And I agree with you about the swarm. You know, it isn't a particular place. Global governance is distributed. And it's a good analogy that you've got with the flocks of birds that are out there. Thank you so much for joining us again. People can go to shattertheswarm.com, or you can go to Shiva4president.com. Thank you very much, Dr. Shiva. Appreciate it.
Thanks, David. Be well. Best to you and your son and your family.
Thanks
for having me on the show. Be well.
Thanks,
David.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.